In the beginning, there was nothing. Then there were comic books. Once you enter our world, there is no escape. Comic exposure begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Comic Exposure Podcast. My name is Josh, and with me is my little bombardier, my hero, my little G.I. Joe, the one, the only.
Bombs away! Travis Ratz here.
Welcome to the Comic Exposure Podcast, where Travis and I dive deep into graphic novels and trades, and you, my friends, are on one of those episodes right now. It is a comic book club day, and we have got one for you, hot and fresh off the presses. This comic book club that we've got coming for you today. We in the month of February, we have been reading World War II war books, right? We read Partisan. We read, what was the other book we read, Travis? Why is my brain?
Which is
working?
A World War II.
Yeah, which is a World War II. And to cap off our war themed month, we read Escape.
We're kind of trapped in war themes.
What
we need to do, Josh, is we need to escape.
We need to escape. And with the help of Rick Remender and Daniel Acuna and their 6 issues of Escape that just, issue 6 just dropped on Image, we are going to do just that. Now, here's something that Travis and I don't normally do. We don't normally read books as they are coming out. We don't normally read like, hey, this book just, the last issue just dropped. We do it very rarely. But
Travis was under the assumption that when we got to book 6, that would be the end of the series.
No, Travis was
surprised when he opened up on Wednesday thinking he was going to read The Escape of Escape.
No.
And realized that Travis almost messaged Josh being like, what the hell? But Travis said we could do it anyways.
I appreciate that, Travis Ratz. This is the first arc of an ongoing series. I don't know how long it plans to be from Rick Remender and Daniel Acuna about escaping of a bombardier, escaping a war-torn country. He is a dog. He is an American.
A bear, isn't he?
I think he's
okay,
a dog.
Okay. Is he really?
I think he's a dog.
Oh, okay.
Because everybody else is a
dog in the U.S.
Yeah, yes, and I think he's a dog.
And then mind.
The Nazis, they're not called Nazis, but the stand-ins for Nazis are bats. So what we have is some cats and some dogs, and maybe Billy's a bear. He could be a bear. His ears are more bear-like than dog-like. You could be right, Travis.
Yeah, bats, cats, and dogs. Yeah.
The key part
kind of blew my mind.
The key part here is that they are anthropomorphized animals. Along the lines of, Travis, did you ever read Mouse?
Yes. That's what it makes me think of. This is like action-packed Mouse.
Action-packed Mouse, right? Instead of it being real world, instead of it being like, oh no, this takes place in Nazi Germany. This takes place in a concentration camp. This is a different world, different, you know, names, different things like that. But what we get is the story of Billy, dog or bear, who is a bombardier pilot trying to take out this giant gun to end the war against the bats, but they fail and they have to
trapped in enemy territory. One revolver. And one pack of C4 left. Will he be able to finish his mission?
Or yes.
Is things gonna get batty?
So that's where we're at. That's this book. And I will say, out of the 3 books we've read, the most, and I don't, and this is hard to say because Partisan had some tense moments, but I believe that this is a little more tense just because of the nature of, like, it is literally, here's the bombing raid, here he is getting out of the plane, here he is finding out he's trapped, oh my God, he's got to hide, right? It is not jumping from point to point, so the intensity doesn't abate.
Yeah, for me, I could agree on that. This is the best pace. Yeah. I don't know, man. Yeah, yeah. Partisan had some pretty dark stuff, man.
Dark, yes. This feels a little more like the pacing is more intense, I think, is what we've got.
This is the most action of all of them on there.
Yeah.
And I think, well, anytime you put animals in for human characters, it does a couple of things, right? Anthropomorphizing these characters.
Yeah.
I think even Remender says it in one of the back issues. He does a letter column on there where people will write in after like issue two. And I think he talks about the sense, this is something we all know, is that, you know, a lot of times viewers or readers, they empathize and sympathize and feel more care for animals. It's the reason why, you know, if a horse dies in Braveheart, you're like, whoa. Why'd you have to ride the horse out of the bar, you know, the inn, Mel, as opposed to 100 men can die and they're like, oh, okay. But one horse dies and you're like, what? And like tears are in your eye. So there, in some ways it does make you feel a little bit more for the characters because you're kind of conditioned to feel empathy for animals in kind of weird ways as readers and viewers. But in another way, it creates distance. Unlike Partisan, when it's like, no, when there are a group of Jewish men and women who are being killed, it is Jewish men and women standing naked in a pit.
Yeah.
Here, it's, you know, there's a bat character who is helping him out, which is supposed to stand in for like a, you know, resistance, empathetic character.
Yeah, yeah. And I like, Billy is not the main character. Milton is the main character. Billy is one of the guys in the plane. Billy is one of the guys in the plane. But I
agree. Billy very much is a dog.
Yeah. old dog, old salty dog. So
come here, buddy.
So, all right, Travis, we have this war-torn country that it is this interesting piece where you have, again, the guy who did the bombing, he's run, what is it, like 30 runs or something like that, they said, however many runs, more than you should have been. Their luck,
more than 20.
Their luck should have run out, and it finally has, and they are shot down in enemy territory. They have to survive. You said it, he's got some C4, he's got just his handgun with a couple of bullets left, and he's got to make it to this giant gun to blow it up. But as you alluded to, we don't see him make it there just yet. This is an ongoing. I'm curious if it'll be more than 12 issues.
I see. I'm surprised it's going to be more than 7, honestly. I thought when I sat down with 6 that we were kind of set up to maybe put a button on. I'm like, oh, this is going to have to move pretty fast. But once I got into it at the end of it, I mean, the end of that issue, it feels like, I don't know. I guess you could always throw another wrench into it, right? We could talk about where we're at the end and what do we think is going to happen next. But what I like is, these are all three different war books that we've read. They're so unique.
Yeah.
One of the things that's fun with this one is, you know, the title Escape is when you think about, like Europe, which is supposed to be like a stand-in for, you think about these little towns and how they're set up, it's self-contained. The book has many boundaries. It's basically following this guy once he crash lands to get out, but he's also bound within the geographical area of the city that he's trying to get out. And the story is just about his escape so far, it seems.
Yeah,
we do get flashbacks for large chunks of issues, which I want to talk to you about on here.
Yeah,
but I just love the container within the container. The story is just about the escape. The escape is just from this city location base area. So there is just very many. I just feel it feels claustrophobic, but not in a bad way. It feels like, okay, because we're putting everything in like a bottle, everywhere you look, there's like action and something happening. There's not a lot of downtime.
Yes. Yeah. I would agree with you. It is this piece. And I think the downtime comes from, you just mentioned it. We get to pause the intensity when we get to these sort of flashback moments, right, where we get to kind of see, okay, how are we, you know, what does this look like? Well, how did we get here? And that gives you some breathing room, right? So it's not the intense. He's hiding. And I would tell you that's how you make it more than six issues, right? You kind of tell his backstory. You get to why he's here, why he thinks he's never going to see his own kid, right? He talks about that, right? He left his wife, who's pregnant, to come over here to go fight overseas. He runs into a dad and his son who like rescue him and let him hide from the Nazi stand-in bats because they are freedom fighters. They don't like this. The guy's wife was a, you know, an underground resistance leader, right?
Yeah.
And so you get these breaths, but it's still giving you more of the story, right? You get to learn more about Milton and kind of dig in what kind of character he is. And this very nihilistic thing that he has, he's like, I'm not going back. Like, yeah. I don't even think he wants to escape.
Yeah. And that manifests itself where, when the person who helps him, the bat who helps him on there, yeah, is asking about his son. And he's like, I don't know. I don't know what his name is. I haven't written her. I haven't got the letters because I'm not going to meet him. If I know his name, it becomes too real.
Right.
And to me, I think that's one of the things that stands out to me in this book the most, other than the art, which we'll talk about later, which I really love, is just the emotional intensity that is coming from the character Milton.
Yeah.
That you wouldn't expect, and the story wouldn't have to be in order for it to sell some comics, you know, some bears, some really cool art, some guns, escaping, you know, badass talk between, you know, some of the soldiers.
Yeah.
But he has this sense of, like you said, like nihilism. Like he believes he's on a righteous cause, right? At the beginning. In fact, the whole first issue, you have about five or six characters who in a short amount of time, you really come to care for in that issue. And they all like die except for Milton, yeah, like, possibly one other. And they are debating. They're having this debate over, they're about to drop this bomb and kill all these people. And they have this conversation. And Milton is very much like, no, like basically the equivalent of the only good, yeah, bat is a dead bat. And like, we got to end this one way or another. Like they have to go. Like this evil, yeah, has to be stopped, and they are not worth our sympathy. They are not worth this, right? As, yeah, the story goes on, and even though he's being pursued by these bats, there are moments where he questions that solidity that he had with his belief starts to have some, like, chink in it.
Yeah. Every bat is a bad bat, right? Like you start off, like the whole second issue is mostly flashback, right? He's landed, he's trying to figure out where he's going to go on his map, and then it switches to how he enlists in the war. You learn that he was, you know, like a pilot.
Real pilot.
You stunt flying and stuff like that, like those
barnstormers.
Yeah, barnstormers, right? And then he meets a political gal who's
a foxy lady.
A foxy lady who's saying, hey, these guys are bad, bad, bad. And then he finds out she's pregnant. And he doesn't really want to, like, it's not about going to war. It's not about that. But then he goes to the movies and like, he sees the serial, the newsreel before the film, talking about how bad the bats are and how they are killing allies and they're coming to their doorstep, and you can see it on his face. And like the one line is, fate didn't knock, it kicked the damn door in, right? Like, yeah, he's like, my wife is pregnant, we're about to have this baby. I just saw the horrible images of these Nazi bats, Narnian bats or whatever they are, yeah, killing allies. And he's like, well, I got to do it. I can't, you know.
What's interesting about... Yeah, go, sorry.
And well, and he's like, his wife didn't tell me I had to enlist. She didn't need to say the words. Didn't need to. I saw the goodbye in her eyes. Because he says, what kind of man hides from duty?
But see, what makes this work for me on a whole nother level is he was this pilot, right? And when he was, right. before he met his love of his life, like he could make a living at that. Like he had yeah. enough money to make a living at it. As soon as he coupled up, he realized, and she got pregnant, he couldn't live that kind of life anymore. He had to give up what he enjoyed, the skies, right?
Right.
And at first he did it willingly, but then it grinds on him, right? This is like the domesticity. It's taking a wild thing.
He's got to work for it. He's working for her dad, right? Yeah.
Working for her dad. And like at one point he's like, I can't get on top. And he's like, I'm doing this for you. Like this is, I get, you know. And then it's like his escape is when the war starts. And right. then he's escaping this, what he feels trapped in this domestic thing. And it's an easy escape because you can just be like, well, I got to do it. It's my duty to my country. And yeah. I find that fascinating. And probably a real thing when these wars happen, where there are some men like who are drafted and some men who are just like, it beats what's going on here. It beats yeah. the mundaneness, the overbearingness, yeah. the claustrophobia of this like daily grind, especially if you're like the kind of guy that Milton is, where he's like in the skies and he's flying and right. he's a real kind of like on their first date at the fair, she's like calling him out. She's like, basically like, you just kind of like, you don't live by any laws. He goes, nope, I don't prescribe to anything. And that's done me just fine. And then yeah. he falls in love. And then he tries to be something it's not. He finds himself in this domestic situation. And Josh, like the titular title, he's got to escape. And now yeah. he's in the war and he's got to escape from this other thing.
He's escaping the escape, right? Like, or he's yeah. not, or really what it looks like is he has no plan to escape in reality.
Yeah.
His plan is to go blow up this giant, comically large, like anime sized gun. That's in this city. Like that is a thing that I think is the most, that's what I think Remender leans into this not being World War II, right? Because yeah. you can go like, oh no, look at the gun. If he just blows up this gun, it's over. And you're like, oh my God, that's a huge cannon.
It's like right? the things that Marvin the Martian would use, you know?
Yes.
Like
yeah.
You pull
yeah.
out the Marvin the Martian cannon.
but it lets him kind of ratchet up pieces in a different way. But there's part of me that goes, but there's part of it that goes like, well, it's not World War II. Is it a cop-out to not write it about World War II, right? Because clearly it's veiled at World War II.
Sure.
So what keeps you from just saying it's World War II, right?
Yeah, I think it's just a disassociation. As soon as you say the word Nazi, there is inability to feel empathy for any of that side of the war. Right.
Yeah.
And even if you're like, well, they're clearly a stand-in for Nazis, just by not naming them that and putting them just off center of it enough that there are moments, if you get caught up within it, you can be like, you know, even the soldiers, the bat soldiers, you know, some of them, they make the point. They're like, hey, you know how many people you killed? And I'm not just talking about the good ones. I'm talking about the soldiers who are like actively tracking him. Like those are our friends. Like they're like, you just came in and dropped a giant bomb killing all, you didn't care about the civilians you killed. You know how many civilians you just killed.
Yeah.
And if it was Nazis, you're like, well, you guys are Nazis.
Right. Right. I guess. Yeah. I think that allows that to be different. Right. I agree with you on that one. So,
and the guy that saved him, the guy that helped him out, isn't like the equivalent of a Jewish man and family. He would be like, he was just the equivalent of a German at the time who just didn't
a resistance,
agree
right?
with the party. Yeah. Not even a resistance, morally didn't agree with it. And he really wasn't resisting. It was his wife, right? So,
right, right.
Yeah.
I that like
intense.
Yeah. I like this idea that part of the last issue, issue six. So we get the bomber issue, we get the flashback issue, we get the issue of him trying to evade, we get the issue of him like staying and learning about this family, and then his plan is to get captured. That's how he's going to get in to this facility, is to get captured into the facility in order to make it to the gun, right?
Wait, so if he's in the town, he's trying to escape, but then he puts himself inside the facility, will he have to then escape that facility? This is an escape on an escape on an escape, Josh.
It's like, yeah, it's multiple escapes all at the same time.
Okay, can I talk to you about the getting captured, because that was the last issue that we read, right?
Yeah.
Okay, dude, I was gonna say Nazi bat, the bat, like the commander bat, is dope. Like his character design, his glasses, the way he speaks, he's terrifying, man.
Yeah. It's this whole sort of like air around him in the this is your woman. I'd want to get back to her too, right? Like, we know who you are. We know that you've blown up all these things, right? And through all of this, Milton is like, oh, I'm going to get that picture back. You think you have me, but I'm getting out of here, right? Like, you're not going to stop me, right?
He's like the villain in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
He reminds me of that.
Yeah. And he's got this whole thing. He does. He escapes. He, you know, makes his way, beats the crap out of, you know, a Nazi, takes a German, that takes the, you know, the bat uniform, and is now in it. But he looks nothing like a bat, so I don't know how this is going to fly, right? Like, he's got like that bear and muzzle, but everybody else has these long bat suits.
He's a different type of bat, man. He's a different type of species.
Oh, yeah. Does that exist in this world?
While you're talking, I'm going to look up different bat types.
And then it ends with him finding the armory, right? And I love that the last line is he's like, pulls a grenade out of the box of grenades. Let's jitterbug.
Let's jitterbug. Yeah, that's the kind of fun stuff on there. And yes, Josh, there are bat species that look exactly like that character.
Okay, let's hope that there are Narnian bats in this.
Let's hope they're not in Arizona, because those things are freaky.
So I really, really enjoyed this book, Travis. The pacing was good. Sometimes I think flashbacks can really derail a story sometimes, right? Because you're like, you're burning on it, you've got it, what's going on? And then all of a sudden you pump the brakes and veer away from the action. But I thought that Remender does a really good job of inserting the flashback early and not spending a lot of time on it. I mean, he does. He spends an entire issue on it. But it feels like, I mean, it's very television. Is that the best way to say it? Like, it's very TV, like, and this episode is about this, right? We were really intense. We saw a lot of people die that first issue. We should really chill it. So let's pull it back, right? And so this feels very... feels very TV, right?
And you could consider it filler, which sometimes I would, but not in this book, because it really gets me to the themes that I'm more interested in when it comes to Milton. And it makes me feel for his dilemma.
Yeah.
And not you just get a soldier trying to escape, but like a real complex character who is going on pure momentum in order to just accomplish a goal he set out to do. And in this sweep of momentum, we get to find out what caused this drive, what's motivating it here. And we realize it's not just like me, G.I. Joe, me here to, you know, kill. It's like there's something propelling him.
Right. And I really do. And I think he does a really good job, because issue three is back to action. Right. So we get action, flashback, action, slow it down again. Let him like meet with the bat Bat family for an issue, right? Let's have the Bat family try to find him. We get a little bit of flashback again in that issue. And then it's again, it's him living in that house and the tense nature of that issue is just like him learning about the bats. And then you get the next issue, which is the tense nature of the bats trying to find him in that house, and then his escape from there, and then his plan. And so it does a really good job of like the roller coaster of each issue kind of keeps you going like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And then he does a really good kind of cliffhanger, or a really good like, oh crap, I gotta know what's happening next, right? With that at the end of every issue. Let's talk about Daniel Acuna's art on this, Travis Ratz.
Acuna artist, what a wonderful art.
Dude, it is a gorgeous, gorgeous
book. It's good.
It is magnificent.
I can only imagine that, you know. I think a lot of people have a hard time drawing certain types of animals, like horses and things like that. You hear that a lot, like drawing horses is hard.
Yeah.
Unless he was just out of the box good at drawing dogs and bats and cats and possibly bears, there has to be like a lot of study for Acuna in here to not only capture the animal essence of the animal that he's portraying, but then to humanize it, and how would that person move with the gun or in a uniform? Or that's got to be really hard. That's got to take a lot of study.
And how do you make a bear who's human like seem human like? How does that emotion translate? How do you make a dog look like he's just been blown apart? And how do you show the fear on that dog's face? How do you show the crazed look in that cat gunner? Like, how do you, like, all of that is very.
And to do it in a recognizable way, you're like, I know that emotion. I know that emotion on a human being.
Yeah, it is great. He does all of the art and color, right? So he's tackling both pieces in here. The coloring is gorgeous. The whole book, like, he can draw guns, he can draw tanks, he can draw planes, he can draw all of these animals. It all looks just so good. And the amount of like onomatopoeia, like the onomatopoeias, the giant explosions, the awoos, the kabooms, the twooms, the, like, he has sound effects all over it. And it feels, even in those moments where like you're like, oh man, this is violent and real, all of those little comic book things just pull you into the fact that this is an art form that, although it's silly because it's dogs and cats and but he's still brutal, but he still gives you all of those like comic booky things, like little lines to show movement and the sound effects that are everywhere. He does such a great job with this book. Lots of inset panels where you get to zoom in on something. Lots of like, ooh, I gotta show a facial scene here, even though I'm showing this giant amount of wreckage. I've gotta do this inset so you can see this small piece of what's going on. Just a fantastic, fantastic book. Really enjoyed.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think, okay, same writer, same artist. The only thing that's different is that they're just straight up human characters. Do you think it would lose anything? Do you think it would hit harder? Do you think it wouldn't hit? I know it's hard to say. How would you like this book if it wasn't this key feature in it? But do you think that the fact that they are animals adds is an important spice to it, that if you removed it, the dish wouldn't be enjoyable?
Yes. And I would say that because I think that we read a very similar story, maybe not similar, but a very sort of emotionally tinged story about war with Partisan, right? Very much kind of, she's escaping, she's fighting. the settings and the art on that was gorgeous as well, right? We talked about how great the art on that book was. There's something about the otherworldly nature of this, the fairy tale-ness of it being animals, mm-hmm. right? The Aesop's fables of it, mm-hmm. right? That I think just makes it magical, might not be the right word, but fantastical, right? That I think makes it, it just notches it up. I think it makes it more, I don't know, it's watership down, right?
It's more visually interesting because I think, and I interrupted you, I'm sorry.
I think you're right, that
this story on its surface isn't wholly original. A character trying to escape from thing. I mean, they made a bunch of movies in this after World War II in Hollywood. Someone escaping. Yeah. The greatest. Hogan's here, you know, whatever. So we've seen that. We've seen the interrogation. We've seen, like, the Gestapo come into a place and be like, where were you 3 days ago? You are, we have done research on you, and you are an alliance with,
I gotta stop you right there. For a man who lives in, Germany, you have a terrible German accent.
I wasn't doing German. I was doing the Rivian.
You live in, I know you can do a better German accent.
Okay.
Than that.
We know you are in league with, I can't do it. I can't do it.
Normally, that was like a bad Schwarzenegger.
Normally when I try to do German, people make fun of me because it's me doing like bad Japanese. So I'll be like, you are not one of us anymore. Yes, I'm just gonna stop. All right. So I think that during those scenes, like the running scenes and stuff like that, like, oh, I've seen this before. And so the parts where you're like, oh, this scene is very familiar. This scene is very reminiscent. This scene is in conversation with so many scenes in the past. Simply having it a cool looking bat makes it feel fresh again. And simply having it in a bear tied to a chair, which we've seen a million times being or a human being tied to a chair being interrogated, like we saw in Partisan, which your mind kind of like, I know what's happening here. I can fill in the blanks. Simply the fact that it's a bear is like, yeah, look at that bear. Oh, he hid like something in his mouth. Where would a bear hide that? Does a bear have a little pocket in its mouth?
Yeah, I think it lets you lean into, and campiness might not be the right word, but it lets you be a little more over the top when it's animals. That character, the bat who goes into the home to try to find him with those giant ears, bigger than all of the other bats.
That's the one I meant. That's the one I meant. That's the bat I was talking about.
With the red glasses and the red.
Terrifying.
Just in the big hat and the little bat mustache, right? Like, all of that is so over the top. And you want to
join me for a smoke? No, I'm good. Okay.
Dieter, would you like to pet my monkey? Right? Like, it becomes this, you get to be more over the top and more fantastical. And you get to, everything gets to go to 11 when you're using animals instead of
people. Animal Farm, baby. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So you get to like lean into it just a little bit more about how out of this world it is when it's not people. So I think it serves the story really well. This is one of my favorite new things that I've read. Right. Like when I talk about like new series, I am super excited to read what's going on. I don't read single issues very often though, so I'm like, oh crap, I got to wait another. Am I going to wait 6 months to read the next piece of it? Because I don't want to read it piecemeal. It was hard enough to read 5 issues and then go, oh, crap, I got to wait. I got to wait 2 weeks before I can read the
You think it's hard? Sixth one? About, you know how I work. I got to make sure I'm reading them in the right order when I buy them online.
Exactly. When you're reading them single issues, you got to make sure you're reading them in the right order. All right. So, Travis, great book. I enjoyed it. This, I think, just... I can't, just the coloring was fantastic too, right? Like the night, the dark shades, the fire, the gun, the muzzle flares. He does it all really, really well. And really kind of sets a mood throughout the entire series of what it looks like when it's daytime, when he's back home and everything in the U.S. is so, or the stand-in for the United States, yeah, is so bright and colorful and whatever. And then you're back to this bluish gray, gnarly wasteland where he finds himself. I am stoked about what's next. I will definitely read the next bit of it. We say that a lot on this show where we go like, yeah, I think I really want to read the second volume of it. This is one where like I will probably just read along monthly
in the single issues.
In the single issues.
I gotta figure out how this goes. I mean, one more issue should suffice. And I'm like, how could they have more issues? So I'm kind of curious on what, there's gotta be some sort of other major obstacle that keeps them from crossing the finish line, which it seems like he's about to cross.
Yeah, my mind goes, it's got to be another. If you're doing it for
resistance.
If you're doing it for the trades, it's got to be another six, right? Five to six, right, in order to make that. Because if it were only four more issues, you'd have done five and five, right?
Yeah, but people are trying weird things like single standalone things that exist in like a 10. Brubaker does weird stuff on there. Maybe he's trying out something, you know. Remender's been in the game enough that he's probably a little bit jaded with the containers that they make them tell stories in, you know. He's probably a little bit sick of the 6-issue arc. So I don't know, we'll see.
Yeah. Maybe. I'm interested to see what this looks like. To see what this is, because right now it's just 6 issues. There's definitely going to be a 7, but I'm curious like how long he's going to put this thing out. And I am very glad, Travis, that we decided not to wait till June when all of this comes out in 1 6-issue arc.
Oh, I guess it is 6-issue trade then, huh?
Okay. Yeah. So here's what I want to know. Here's my concern, Travis Ratz. Here's what I want to know. My curiosity. Or maybe it's not 6 issues. Maybe the trade, I thought the trade was only going to be 6 issues for it, but I could be wrong. Maybe the trade will be more than 6 issues, and we've just jumped the gun on when it comes out.
The giant cartoonish Marvin Martian gun we have jumped
the giant
over,
cartoonish.
Quite the feat. It is huge.
Yeah, it is gigantic. So, Travis Ratz, anything else you want to say about our final World War or final war book for February?
Yeah, I'm gonna say, let's just say World War II books, because they're all World War II, and that makes our theme more niche.
Yeah,
then we can do war books some other time. Just pick different wars. I'm gonna say that this one was really refreshing, just because of its pacing, especially coming off of The Witches of World War II, which I found a way to get into it, but the pacing on that was just like, it was not a jitterbug pacing. It was the opposite of a jitterbug. So this was nice. This was like of the three books, it was nice to see a war book that moved the way like battle would, you know?
Right. And we get this felt the most war book, which is funny because Ennis writes, just loves a war book, but Partisan was the least war of the, like, well, it wasn't the least war of what we read, but it was far more like not direct war. It's kind of that underground thing, you know?
Yeah. La Résistance.
Yeah. So I just looked it up. That's the last word on it. The collected issue is only going to be 1 through 6. It comes out in June. And I just want to end on this. Do you remember, Travis Ratz? Do you remember when Image Comics would release the final issue in an arc? And then
a couple weeks later,
or maybe just the next month later, they would drop the trade for $10. Do you remember that world?
Yeah.
I remember
it was
that
like
world.
Now they do it, and you're like, well, they're probably waiting because they're going to put extra interviews in there, or some like they're going to have like a portfolio. Maybe they will, but like you can do that in a month, man. The presses are already set up; they're all made for 6-issue arcs. You're not even resetting the machinery, Image.
Yeah, I'm interested to like there's this balance between like when you want to do this. And I don't know if they've now decided like, no, we want to try to milk more money out of those single issues.
Of course, that's what it is. And you can't blame them in an industry where it's, you got to take every dime possible, but like, we're going to buy it regardless. And also we've been doing a podcast for like 11 years. Image, can you just send us books, man? Hey, Image, if you're listening, like this, I'm not, that came out like really harsh. I didn't mean it like that, but it's like, we do your books, you know, like what is like, what's like a two fall off into a box. We'll give you our addresses.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. It'll be fine.
I'll pay for shipping, man. Like I'll send you $20 and you like a tab and you can,
yeah.
Just, and when it's drained, I'll send you 20 more.
Just keep dumping them to me. You know, let's do it. All right. Thank you for tuning in, folks. You can find all of our episodes over at comicexposure.com or on your favorite podcast app, whatever that is, however you listen to it. Hey, don't forget, we are now just living the Instagram life we are as an organization. Comic Exposure Inc. is all over Instagram. We've got, I'm sharing stuff. We're sharing what books are coming up. We're sharing panels from those books that we see. We're sharing what's new, what are the next reads that we're doing. I already have the March reads up, Travis Ratz. People can see what those March books are. I'm not going to tell you on this episode.
Here's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
You, Josh, and you can decide if you're going to do this or not, but now I'm going to say it out live on the show, and I can't edit this out. I don't have that kind of time. I don't know if you guys know this, a couple of years ago, we switched to StreamYard, and we do this. We record the live visual on it. I don't have the time to put these online, but like those go through snippets. I'm going to snag some snippets. I'm going to send them to Josh to visually put on Instagram if he so chooses.
Perfect. What we should do is there's a way that this will just automatically go on YouTube, Travis Ratz. There is a way. StreamYard will just it will auto live onto YouTube. This could be live on YouTube right now and just live there. And you wouldn't to do any editing.
We could do that. I can figure that out. But like, I also look pretty scrubby in these videos. And this, I look pimple, man. It's coming in here today. I'm getting real old.
You think it's the best? I look, we started this bad boy 7-something in the morning. This is what happens here. I literally got up, used the restroom, and hopped on this bad boy. So
okay. Anyways. All right, Josh. I understand. I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. Anyways, folks, go to the Instagram, see what books are coming up, follow along with us, comment, rate, review, all those things. Send us some messages on Instagram and we'll make sure that we chat it up with you guys. I've been pulling random things off my shelf to share on the Instagram story because I have a dumb amount of random comic books that I will share. Travis is going to share with me some of his junk so that I can post on Instagram so that we can do that. He's going to send me snippets of his nerd collection that we can share with you all online. So folks, thanks for tuning in and we'll see you next trade.